It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So, I think I have come to the realization that I really want to like hunting in video games, and I think I like hunting in video games, but I don't think I actually like hunting in video games.
What made you realize that?
Because I was watching yet another video game about hunting, and I was like, that looks really cool. And then I was like, yeah, but you played that game, and it was way too hard for you. And I had that, you've seen me play Red Dead 2. Like, yeah. I get really into it, but it's frequently difficult in a way that it requires a lot of patience and stuff that I don't enjoy. If it's an easy version of hunting, I like it more. I think I like just the sort of gotta catch them all vibe to it.
But you like fishing in video games.
Yes. Not as much as I want to like hunting, but I do. And I tend to be pretty good at those. But I just get very easily frustrated with these.
So there's... You're in order of your preference from lowest to highest, it is hunting, fishing, and then as much as you want to like hunting.
I didn't follow that.
All right.
I want it's easy hunting, easy fishing. I don't know if hard fishing comes first or hard hunting, because hard fishing really sucks. Like, I do not enjoy fishing in Stardew Valley.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's just difficult.
Is it hard all around, or is it just hard to get, like, the particular kind of fish you want or something?
It's the mechanic is hard for me, and it's specific to it, because Cemetery Keeper, the other game I play, that has, like, the exact same mechanic as Stardew Valley, but it's just, I find it more forgiving. But even stupid Fable, like I was playing it the other game, I'm like, oh yeah, this fishing game is easy, I love this, and then I was breaking my fishing line, I'm like, dang it,
that doesn't happen just, in my game.
I love the idea of it. I love the idea of stalking obviously I don't love the idea in real life for ethical reasons, but I love the stalking the prey and catching them and skinning them and making things out of them or eating them or whatever. It all just seems really fun. But wow, it's long and boring and hard.
Well, and I felt like in Red Dead, it was, yeah, it felt relaxing. But probably just because I was just watching you wander around the wilderness. And I wasn't particularly invested in whether you actually were successful or not.
I think that is a lot of it. And that started to be the vibe I sort of got with that. In that game in general, I just started being like, you know what? East. I'm going to go east and see what happens. And like, if I was just hunting for food or whatever, it was fine. But when I was like hunting specific game, and that's the game I saw is a Monster Hunter game, which is a long running series.
Right.
Where you hunt all sorts of monsters and you make cool armor and weapons out of their pelts and parts and things. And I bought it and I was really excited for it. It's just too hard for me. And I was like, well, this game is too hard. I like a different one. And now I'm starting to realize, I think that's how most hunting things are. And I want to be into it, but I'm not sure I am.
Well, yeah. I mean, if that's the primary point of the game, you don't want to make it too easy. But Monster Hunter is like Pokemon. It is like a complete your collection kind of thing, right?
Not exactly. You don't catch any of them.
Okay.
You kill them. Right. You do kill them to, like, you to complete death. Well, you kill them for parts for your new armor and weapons.
Okay.
So there is that aspect of gotta complete the collection. But it's more of a dead version of that collection.
Right. Do you put any of their heads on the wall?
I never did, but I didn't stop my friends when they did, so I
Okay.
feel like I'm complicit. I'm kidding, I don't have friends. Hello,
Linux.
everyone! Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world, eagle-eyed listeners and viewers will have already caught this, but that is normally Tony and William, but this week is Tony and Trish. I'm Tony. You
Should
got
I
the
tell you about the other podcast I did now?
That was Tony and William.
No, it was Tony and Trish.
But I mean, no, but it's still fine as long as it wasn't Tony and William first. And also, it would have had to be this
Oh,
week.
okay. All
So I
right.
think we're
I
good.
see what you're saying. All
Who's
right,
this
I'm
other
Trish.
Tony, though? We'll talk about that offline. This is episode
Podcaster.
683. I am running the background things that William would usually run. William's life
Because
is
I am an insufficient William.
she is the most relaxed producer ever. William's life is particularly crazy at the moment, and so he and I were unable to find a time where we could record this week, so my lovely wife stepped in as she is wont to do in the past. It's a week
William
by week
is
thing right now.
okay.
Yes, William is okay, and he will be back at some point, but it may not be next week necessarily. And I haven't worked. Trish may step in again. I may try doing a little solo podcasting. We might take a little hiatus. We'll see. But
What have you
William will be
considered
back.
podcasting with Ezzy?
Well, she frequently makes appearances, but
I know,
she
that's
doesn't
why
have
I'm
a lot to
thinking.
say. So, just to get this out of the way, if this is your first time listening, normally he doesn't look like he does here. He sounds different too. Has a different name, whole thing. Anyway, we have a hat. It is magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people like to write into that email address, which whatever the crap they want. And the hat itself magically forwards us the emails, and then we read them, talk about them till we're bored, and that's the whole show. And we're getting low again. So if you're hearing this and you're one of our faithful hatlings out there, please email us with whatever you think might be good. This is always weirder to say, how was your week? Because I pretty much already know.
Yeah.
You got any surprises of your week that you haven't told me that you want to tell to the internet?
Well, I mean, the podcast with the other Tony,
With
but
the other Tony. I feel like that's an offline conversation.
I went to the eclipse on Monday. We went to a spot so that we could see the full, what do they call that? The total eclipse.
Totality.
Yeah, totality. And I went with my sister and brother-in-law and my niece. It was a whole party. So there was that. And then you and I started Fallout this week.
We did.
And we watched, I believe it's called Theater Camp.
Yes, that was on my list. I had forgotten about it until I saw my list.
And we spent the weekend in Chillicothe. We got to see a
That's
high school.
really weird to hear whoever it is that was peeling out. I heard them, and then I heard it through your
Yeah.
thing. I was like, what is that? Oh, it's the same thing.
We got to hear a choir concert, a high school choir concert.
Yeah, we did. It'll be the last time we see our nephew sing. And it also should be the last, I mean, it should be most, unless something untoward happens that I'm not aware of, it will be our last time going to one of the concerts at this particular high school, at your alma mater high school.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I guess we could just stay alive for a really long time and they could have kids or something. I don't
That also go to that high school. But yeah, it's unlikely. You got to a
know.
lot of concerts there.
Yeah, I think that's everything kind of note in brief. It was busy, busier than usual.
It's been pretty busy.
How is your week?
It's all right. I'm on a variety of new meds. I'm slowly ramping my way up on a new med to go with my existing SSRI that, depending on who you talk to, will either help with my anxiety or my depression or will make one worse. I don't know. So far, it seems okay. I'm having a hard time telling if it's having an effect. It's definitely not making things worse, so that's
Yeah.
good. But I think it might be improving things. I'm not sure.
I
I'm not
wondered that
watching.
yesterday. It was the first time in a while you told me you had a good day.
Yeah, no, I was surprised by that too. I'm not watching anything new except series 17 of Taskmaster is out and about.
Oh, yeah.
Enjoying that. One of the guests on that is Nick Mohammed, who is Mr. Swallow, and also Nate from Ted Lasso, and I really like him. So that's been fun. And yeah, saw Theater Camp, watched some Fallout. Do we want to talk about these? You had a different movie you hinted that you wanted to discuss.
Yeah, so I was trying to think of things. Oh, sorry.
Neighbor dogs. Again, I can hear them, and then a second later, I can hear them through yours.
So you, I believe, no, I don't think I ever made you watch the trailer because I think you would have divorced me. But you know the movie Civil War?
Very, very vaguely. Like,
Okay.
talk me through it a little bit, because I only
Well,
really vaguely understand it.
okay. Well, I haven't seen it, so, but
Yeah,
I watched
but I
the,
mean, you've presumably seen a trailer, so you know the
yeah,
premise.
I watched the trailer, and it is about, there is a civil war happening in America, and there are some journalists trying to. I forget if they're trying to go to Washington, D.C. or where they're trying to get someplace specific and not get killed and whatever.
And this is in relatively present day.
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, this is not
Oh,
the famous Civil War.
maybe near future. No, it is not historical and it's not sci-fi.
It's what's happening after the end of the election this year.
I mean, that's kind of what we all assumed, yeah. So I started hearing today that people have actually seen it now
All right.
and they find the movie confusing. Most of us kind of thought the movie would probably be political. And like, you know, look into why there is a civil war happening,
Yeah. Not so much.
and how that came to be, and you know, whatever else. But apparently that is not at all a consideration, in the movie, and it is much more about the fact that war is just awful, and about combat journalism and why that might be important and how it changes things if it's your home versus someplace you got sent to kind of like, you know, watch things from a third person perspective. So I still don't think you're gonna want to see it, and I'm not still not sure I want to see it. But you might want to look up some of the reviews and stuff because it sounds like it's very different than what everybody thought it was going to be. And a lot of
Yeah.
people are having kind of thoughtful conversations about it.
It's a bonkers thing to do In 2024, though, I shouldn't even say, not just it's a bonkers thing to make a movie about a new American Civil War in 2024. It's a bonkers thing to make a movie about a new American Civil War in 2024 and not have it be political.
Right?
Like, it's just a coincidence that he made this.
Yeah.
Unless the take is, look, people, this would suck no matter what side you're on. So maybe let's calm down, which is a sentiment I could get behind, but
Yeah, and I think the writer or the director, someone involved, is British. And so
like that's what you get, colonists.
well, and there was some, like, somebody said, oh, you could easily be like, clearly she doesn't know how America works or whatever, but they're like, no, she probably does. So yeah, anyway, I just thought it was
We're very
interesting.
loud and open about how we work here.
Sure. I thought it was interesting. So, and as we've noted before, we don't have a lot of unshared experiences. And that was the one I had today. And so I was like, oh, I'll save it for the
All
podcast so we have something to
right.
talk about.
Well, but let's talk about do you want to talk about theater camp first or Fallout first?
I'm okay either way. Which would you prefer?
Let's start with theater camp. I feel like we're gonna have less to say about theater camp. Theater camp is on Hulu right now, and it is a comedy about a theater summer camp, and the founder and manager of it ends up in the hospital, and she can't run it this year, and so her son comes in and hijinks ensue.
Yes.
It
And we
notably
agreed.
stars Ben Platt.
And we agreed that it is, who's not Oliver Platt.
No.
And we agreed that it
Strangely.
is a mockumentary. Because what was it
Yes.
recently that I came across that said it was a mockumentary? And I was like, no, it's not.
I think because of the term mock, we discussed that there's some connotation with the term mockumentary that implies there's a comedic angle to it, as
Yeah.
opposed to just being any sort of fake documentary. I think it was Lake Mungo, because we
Oh.
recently watched Lake Mungo, and that is a fake documentary
But
that is
it's
a
not funny.
horror.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is complicated, but we also don't have a term for that one. People also call it found footage, and I'm like, it's very much not. It has been very carefully edited and presents itself as having been very carefully edited.
Yeah, but it is kind of in that genre of, oh, hey, well, no, it's not. Never mind. I was going to say it's in that genre of, we were doing a documentary about something else, and then this crazy thing happened, and that's not
It
entirely.
gets awkward. The Hell House movies are borderline not found footage, but they are also some of the best found footage that's ever made. But yeah, it's that kind of thing. It's presented as a documentary in a very vague sense, in a very early seasons of The Office kind of way. Like, we don't get into why there's a documentary or who's making it or anything. So what'd you think?
Sorry, I started thinking about Lake Mungo. I thought it was cute. I thought it reminded me of some of my summer camp experiences and some of my younger theater experiences. I thought the kids on the whole did like a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And managed to be like somewhat adult and get in their jokes and whatever without me being like, oh gosh, I can't believe they let kids do that. Like, that's so inappropriate. I don't feel like it brought anything novel to the table, really.
I would agree with that.
It was a wayward son makes good kind of thing, but it was definitely entertaining, especially if you have that life of experience of, being involved with theater or whatever.
Yeah. the humor mostly comes from the adults involved who are like theater kids who never left that mentality and have lived their whole life that way. So they're like adult theater kids. And then of course the son who's managing things, who knows nothing really about theater and thinks he knows about business, and that gets involved. And it turns very quickly into one of those camp across the lake where the underdogs, we have to raise the money or the rec center gets closed kind of stories. I think it was very entertaining, but yeah, I mean, the fact that I didn't remember we watched it until I looked it up just now, I think says a lot. It was fun. I had a good time. It didn't stick with me. It didn't provoke thought, except that I'm always a little sad for Ben Platt. And I think that just be maybe the characters he plays. They have a lot of pathos to them. Pathos, pathos, pathos.
Porthos.
Porthos, Aramis. They have a lot of D'Artagnan. All of Ben Platt's roles have a lot of D'Artagnan. For the record, in case anybody who was into the movie version of Dear Evan Hansen, Ben Platt is playing an adult in this. He is one of the teachers. He is not playing one of the kids. Just so we're clear.
You did love the one kid that kept using the office.
Oh yes. Park was the last name. Ken Allen? Allen. I want to say it was Allen Park. That was
Yeah.
just it was just a throwaway joke right in the beginning that one of the kids aspired to be a theatrical agent. And then it just kept coming back. He was calling his agency or whatever and like trying to sell people on the like, and it just sort of every time you had forgotten about it, he would come back, and he was real little. And he was a real fun time. It also it has people besides Ben Platt. I
And the
don't
king.
remember their names, but it has other people I recognize by face. It has the female lead from The Bear, whose name
Yeah.
I have not learned and I really should.
It had Amy Sedaris.
It had Amy Sedaris. It had a woman who I mostly know from I Think You Should Leave. So if anybody watched that, it was one of those. Is she? I've seen her in a couple other things. She does a lot of sort of sketch stuff, but she was here. I forget who else, but th there are other people. It's not just Ben Platt doing it, but
Yeah. I think my favorite kid was he's kind of heavy set and looked like he might be of some type of like Polynesian descent or whatever. But he was the one that always led. It was always him and a group of other boys. And they would do gay theater witch magic when the adults weren't playing
yes.
or weren't around.
And
And something about that just tickled me to death.
he also could really dance
Yeah.
despite being, let's not mince words, fat. Like I was very inspired seeing him. I was like, oh man.
He's a good singer too. Like
Oh, absolutely,
he was
absolutely.
really talented.
Yeah, in general, it was a lot of fun kids. Some of them just who could make a good face, so they were just in one scene for a bit, like the one who narked on the piercings.
Yeah.
There's an announcement one morning from one of the counselors that says, "I can no longer do ear piercings behind the shed because somebody narked." It was Cassie. Cassie narked, and then you just get a cut to her looking kind of sad. But yeah, it's a fun time. It won't change your life, but it's entertaining and amusing.
Yeah, you got a night, you need something to do.
And if you were a theater kid, a little bit of representation. I felt a little seen in a good
Yeah.
way from it.
What did we, was it on Hulu? What did we watch it on?
It was on Hulu. All right, let's talk about Fallout. And now, just to bring everybody up to speed, Fallout is a series of post-apocalyptic video games. with a very the implication is that culture was essentially around the 50s and 60s US when the apocalypse happened, and so there's very much that sort of vibe to it. They are games I have really loved. They are games William's wife has really loved. I have put hundreds and hundreds of hours into them. There have been many of them. I think at least five main ones, sort of. I mean, there's four numbered ones, and then Fallout New Vegas is a very big one as well. It was very good. And Amazon made a TV show about it.
And I didn't play any of the games.
And she has not played any of the games. She has been in the room when I played them. She has watched me. She has listened to me talk about them. But by and large, I would say she was not familiar with any of the lore. Also, just to put it out there, because it's big, one of the main characters, Walton Goggins, who is just a joy and a treasure for everyone. And he's a ghoul in this, so they had to CGI out his nose, which is really freaky looking. All right, so as somebody not familiar with it, give me your take. We've only watched two episodes so far.
Yeah.
Give me your take.
I am surprised. I really, really like it. Like, so what was the thing? What was the time travel thing we watched?
Bodies.
Okay, I almost said bodies, and then I was like, no, that's not it. I don't know. Every once in a while we watch something and like it's just too serious. And I kind of start like trying to pace myself on watching it, but because I just don't I want to see it, but I don't want to watch it, I guess. But
It takes something from you emotionally, so you gotta,
yeah.
space it out.
And I don't really know why Fallout is different. I mean, we're clearly in a post-apocalyptic world. Bad shit happens on a
Quite
fairly
violent.
regular basis. There's lots of blood and guts and whatever. But yeah, I don't know. Something just makes it seem like a fun time. I like it.
It is funny because I was thinking about this the other day. I hate post-apocalyptic shows and
Yeah.
largely movies. And I've talked about that at length. I also really like this show. And I think that says something right there. If you are a fan of Fallout, you will be a fan of the show. If you have never heard of Fallout, you still may like you won't feel lost, I don't think. Trish has occasionally asked questions, but they're more conceptual, like her mind is tossing over things, and she's like, she'll just ask questions that are clearly related to just trails of thought, not anything
All right, well, Tony has completely frozen up for me since he's the one that's running the recording. That I'm assuming that means I'm not actually recorded, right? But
low network bandwidth.
oh,
Wireless
there
connection.
he's
Is that
coming
worse
back.
or
He's
better? I
coming
don't know if the
back.
recording's going to get me or Trish. Yay! All right.
All right, so
I don't
you.
think you asked anything about Fallout that you were confused about.
No, just stuff I'm like curious about. Like they had things that look kind of like helicopters, and I'm like, well, how did that's the thing. Like you said, 50s, 60s, and in terms of aesthetic, it definitely is. But in terms of some of their tech, they have things that I'm like, I don't think they had that then.
Absolutely. And this is the thing. It is that aesthetic. The apocalypse happened in like 2062 or something. Like the apocalypse happened far in the future, but this is a f world where even in the future, the aesthetic was still 50s, 60s style.
Okay.
And that is the thing. As far as I know, this show is canon, essentially. This show is not going to contradict the video games, and what happens in this show will theoretically be reflected within the video games. And I think that's very neat. But the big thing is, I mean, it's just such a simple one. All the shit in the show looks like the shit in the video game. Like, why do video game adaptations not do that more often? Like, it looks like everything looks so exactly like. I keep making little jokes when we're watching that just for me, because of course Trish doesn't know, but like she's hurt and she opens up the first aid kit next to the mirror, which is where they always are. And sure enough, there's a little old-timey syringe thing. And I'm like, yeah, see, that'll do it. That's a stim pack. You don't need stitches or nothing. That's going to clear up 30, maybe even 40% of your hit points, especially if you got some of the right medical perks, which I think she does. Because it's all just that actual stuff. And they handled it really well. But sorry,
Yeah.
back to the thing on why you might like it versus why it seems fun versus like bodies or whatever, and why I might like it despite it being post-apocalyptic. It is fun. It's blackly comic, but it's comic, and it's also not bleak. Like the whole thing is like, oh, out in the wasteland, everybody's bad and out for themselves, which is true, except when it's not. Sometimes there's nice people. You can make friends, you can have loyalty, like things can go well. It's the even though it's set in a post-apocalypse and it's a big thing that like it's lawless and chaos and there's lots of different factions and they're all messed up in their own way and there's no such thing as a happy ending. It doesn't have that sense of like man is the biggest monster kind of thing that all these other ones have.
Yeah.
It's
Well,
just goofy and comic booky.
and it's 200 some years after the apocalypse. So like we've had time to establish social structures.
Yes, shit is created. There are towns and cities, and although we came to a town, and Trish is like, "This has to be an outskirt, right? This isn't a town." And I'm like, "No, by Fallout standards, this is a really big town." I was thinking back to the different games, and I'm like, "Yeah, unless it's some secret underground shit, like this is as big as cities get on the surface."
Well, you said something about it being like the city in Thunderdome.
Yeah, there was a bit of a barter town vibe, but there was also some
But
Diamond City thrown in there and a great deal of Megaton thrown in there if you're a
yeah.
player of the
But
games.
I feel like it was smaller than Bartertown by quite a bit. Like,
I
even
would
if you
agree.
ignore all the underground stuff of Bartertown, it's still smaller.
I would agree. But in Fallout, they don't get as big as Barter Town. And
Well, that's
nobody
probably
knows
good because if they did,
who
they would
run
just
them.
build a cage in the middle of town. And nobody needs that.
I think you mean a Thunderdome.
Sorry.
Two men, they're going to enter, but only one of those men is going to walk out.
Yeah.
That's
I
deep.
mean, two men entered and both walked out, and one kind of flew in and was flung out.
I mean, spoilers.
Sorry.
Now I'm just, and this might just be a joke for Stu, but now I'm hearing the phrase that's Thunderdome said as Mitchell and Webb would say that's Number Wang.
Oh,
And it's
no.
tickling me. There's a giant cat.
Yep.
Ah, she's huge. I love how long it took the camera to figure out she wasn't part of the background and should be unblurred.
I was trying to figure out if I should tell you because I was like, I don't know if she's going to actually get on camera. And then all of a sudden, there was this huge ear.
It's like a tentacle. I do love my big beautiful phone now. It recognizes faces as my old phone did. It also recognizes cats. It puts little boxes around them. It knows when there's a cat there. I like that.
Do you want to tell the Hatters what the present your phone gave you this week?
Oh, it just gave me, they make little stories, which is just it. Some algorithm found a connection through some pictures and gave you a little slideshow, and it was pets and their people.
Oh, yeah. Did you talk about Kion last week?
I don't know that I did. I watched the neighbor dog because they were also gone this weekend while Trish was doing the eclipse. So me and the dog had to work out things. We didn't bond real well, but we got a system going. He's a very, very timorous animal, with some sort of weird habits. He doesn't do a lot, except he likes to play in the backyard. And so we got a system where I would go over there and I would open in the back, and he won't go past me to go outside because he's too scared. So then I would go and get his food, and he would run past while I was in the garage getting that and go outside. And I'd take the food out, and then I would run around and pretend to chase him for a while because he loved that. And then I would go home for like half hour, or hour, and I come back, and he's wanting to come back in, but I open the door, and he won't come in. So I would go out, and we would run some more, but he very quickly would run around me and run back in the house, and then we'd be all set. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it was nice.
Yeah, he plays in the backyard, but he won't play with toys. Like, I tried a couple times to throw a ball or something for him, and he just looked at me like he was trying to decide if I was throwing things at him, and I'm like, no.
Yeah, sometimes I watch it, but mostly he just wants to play fake chasing. Like, I'm not actually supposed to chase him. I just, he's nearby, and then I take a step towards him. He's like, oh. And if I'm not doing it enough, he will buzz me. He will like run past real close just to try and get my attention.
Yeah, that's also usually when I get barked at, is if I'm not.
Yeah. Hey, come get me.
Yeah.
All right. Can you think of anything else? Oh, sorry.
I was going to say he doesn't bark in the house, though.
No, which is nice. Doesn't bark too much even out of the house. He does some, but not much.
Yeah.
Unless you can think of something else, we have an email that I think might be good.
Oh, I'm not used to this. The last time I was on the show, we didn't have email.
Well, this will be interesting for you. This is specifically directed at me, but I think it's good for you because it's gaming related, and you do that, and you have GM'd, so.
Okay.
This is from Azure Talon.
Hey, Azure Talon!
And it says, GM question. And then it says, Tony specifically. So apparently he did not want to know what William thought. You consider yourself a poor/failed GM, according to episode 678. Why? Azure Talon, who always figured you were pretty good at it. That's very sweet of you to say.
You've never GM'd for Azure Talon, have you?
I might have. We attended a couple of cons together. I don't think so. I don't know. I will say this. I do think I'm a poor GM. But I also think a lot of people for whom I have GM'd think I'm a good GM. I think I have weird expectations of myself and GMs in general. I'm starting to realize I might not be a great tabletop RPG individual. I think I'm better at like just writing a story. I think I have a hard time collaborating in anything.
Yeah.
And role-playing is really big for that. And I think I've said on here before, I pretty much can't collaborate. The podcast notwithstanding, but even in the podcast, we're basically doing what I want to do. in the podcast and I direct what happens. But in general, if I am working with other people, I can either run everything completely and I'll tell you what to do and you do it, or I can make no decisions. You tell me what to do, I'll do it. Or we can split the responsibilities or whatever it is, and I'll do my part and you do your part. I cannot actually collaborate. And to a certain degree, you can do those things I described in a tabletop role-playing game, but only to a certain degree. So it gets in the way where either I get in a state where I'm like, the players should be directing this, and I get frustrated because I feel like they're not directing this, or I've got a story thing in mind, the players need to go along with it, and I'm frustrated because they're not going along with it. And yeah. I fluctuate between those two things.
Well, and I also think that you, I don't think you would say that you know very many good GMs. Like, I think your standards are high across the board.
I do think my standards are high. I don't play with a lot of GMs. Of the ones I have played more than once with, I would say the majority of GMs I have known I thought were very good.
Oh, okay.
And especially in recent years. Well, the big ones in recent years that I played with are Tasha Robinson and Dave Avid, listener to the show, and I think they're both marvelous. Although I will admit, as years have gone on, I have noticed how Dave Avid and I view the process differently, but I think he's very good. And yeah, I had some good ones in college and things. I've definitely had some that I'm frustrated with. And of course, I have super broken brain, so sometimes I don't know if it's just that. Like, I've been having difficulty in the last few years, both as a player and as a GM, and I think that's way more just about what's going on with me than about gaming per se.
Yeah.
What do you think makes a good or a bad GM? That maybe that's more what we should hit at.
I guess I think of it kind of like improv. I think a good GM has to be all in and willing to work with the players. Like, it's not an adversarial relationship. I mean, it sometimes kind of is because that's fun, but overall, you know, everybody's trying to have a good time. So,
I was gonna.
Yeah, I don't. I'm trying to think about like, what are my work? Because I don't have nearly as many gaming experiences as a lot of the listeners or you. But like when I think about,
this is a relatively recent addition to the world of gaming. She's been a long time as a gaming widow.
Yeah, I spent a long time watching other people game too.
Yeah, only probably in the last 5-10 years has she started gaming and GMing some.
Yeah, I don't really like it though. When I think about experiences that I've had that I'm like, huh, I don't think I would want to play with that person as a GM before or again, it's usually always because they're like drastically underprepared. Like, to the extent of not even understanding, like, the basic mechanics of the game or something like that. But I also think I really like playing GM-less games.
Mm.
So, like, Steph and I get really into playing Fiasco, and then one year at GammaCon, we played the for the queen thing that we did like a kids version with the family at
Oh, and
one.
I've played for the Queen outside of that time, but yeah, no, I'm familiar.
Yeah.
I like them, but they don't scratch the same itch for me as a proper GM tabletop sort of deal.
I could
I don't
see
know
that.
what it is. The improv thing you mentioned is something I'm very big on, and I think the GMless games tend to be more just sort of improv exercises in a lot of way. I think that is an important part. I know there are styles of GMing that do not require a lot of improvisation, but I think the best versions, it there is a lot of that. Look, she's on both screens. The
Yeah, I mean,
adversarial one, I'm sorry.
I just don't know how you would prepare. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm a terrible player, but like, I feel like every time I'm in a game, somebody comes up with something that seems just batshit. And it's like, how can you have prepared for every possibility? Because how could you have ever guessed that someone would decide to do that?
You cannot prep for what they're going to do that you aren't expecting. And the flip side of that is you cannot make clues so obvious that you are certain they will figure it out.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. And in fact, certain games have built into them every clue has three different clues so that there's a chance to sort of catch on that way. And games where it's just like roll the die and I'll just tell you what the clue was. But I find the whole don't be adversarial thing very interesting. I cannot remember what game it was. But a game not long ago, one of the things in sort of the GM advice section was be a fan of the party.
Yeah.
And it's you don't have to play only NPCs that like them, but like you as a GM should want the party to succeed.
You should be rooting for them.
Yes. And I thought that was a very interesting idea and something that at first blush, I would say, of course, I'm like that. But then when it was sort of presented that way and I thought about it, I'm like, not always. I do have a little like judgy thing sometimes where like you didn't do it the right way, so you're going to get punished for it kind of vibe that I don't like. And it's harder when you are coming from a perspective of wanting them to succeed. I find it is much easier to find ways to sort of fix weird problems we got into because somebody didn't roll right or they went in a direction I wasn't expecting. Like if I'm like, well, I
Well,
want this to work for them. How could if I'm not being on their side, then when that shit happens, I'm like, well, then what would realistically would happen in this situation? And it's usually bad. If
I
I'm
was going to
rooting
say
for them, I say, I'm sorry.
the answer to what would realistically happen is almost always TPK.
Yeah.
There
But if
is
I'm rooting for
nothing
them,
realistic.
you look at it from the perspective of like, okay, this has gone south. How could they succeed?
Yeah.
And then build from that. Our current DM, Trisha's sister, is very worried about killing us. And I understand it's Dungeons and Dragons. That can be a hard thing to control. But in my mind, it's just so not a thing because there are so many ways to use GM fiat, for lack of a better term, to stop it from happening. And in fact, cool shit that can happen if it does happen. If we have a TPK. We all wake up in some chapel somewhere later, and somebody has resurrected us all for reasons. And that's a
Right.
whole storyline. Or we all die and we all end up in the underworld, and it's a whole adventure trying to get out of that. But there's all sorts of ways. And I mean, GMs will work hard to sort of nerf things if they're worried it's going to be too tough for a party. And I do understand that because nobody likes to be suffering too much. But if you're willing to do that, then you should totally be willing to nerf something so that they don't all completely die. I've never worried about killing my characters as a GM, including times when they almost died or actually died. So I find that very sort of surprising. That's not how I operate in a lot of that.
Well, and it can be a balance thing, right? Because
Well, you don't
like,
want it too easy.
yeah, well, and I, so like I spent most of last the session last night and the week the time before with over half my hit points gone. Because I don't like to complain about it because then everybody gets freaked out and like our druid uses a spell slot to heal me and whatever. So I just was kind of not being such a reckless idiot. That's, I mean, that is, my character isn't necessarily written as a reckless idiot. So that's fair. Like, I can make those kind of adjustments.
And in point of fact, our druid used a spell slot on me to restore half of the half of my hit points that she had taken from me
Yeah.
by throwing poisons. What did she do exactly? It involved poisoned mold spores.
She put
Oh,
on a cloak or she shook
and
it
like
out or something.
spun around or something. Yeah, and
Yeah.
got me. She's a nutcase. She's hardly ever in her normal form. She likes being various animals whenever we go around.
Yeah, we should take her to a zoo or
Different
something.
homes. That'd be good. I think I cheat. I cheat in two ways. Or
As a
let
GM
me.
or as a player?
As a GM, there are two things that make people think I'm good at it. Even though I don't think I'm good at it. One is comedy, which is the cheapest, easiest way. If we're all laughing, we're all having a good time, nobody gives a shit. And I'm pretty good at that. And two is I am pretty good at crafting a story concept. I'm pretty good at coming up with an interesting premise, essentially.
I would
And
agree.
actually, the other version is I'm really good at coming up with memorable NPCs. I put on a funny voice and people love it, and they become the NPCs become their best friends in the world or their most hated enemies. I'm really good at character work, as it were. The more I describe this, I might be a good GM. I don't know.
Well, and I think, like, not to underplay it, but you also have a lot of experience, so.
Which is it?
You have,
10,000 hours is definitely applicable here.
right, you have the practice, you have past experiences to draw from. If you've got a totally new party, hell, just you can run them through the same adventure that you already did.
And oh, forget that. I've run them through the same campaign, which wasn't from a book or anything. It was a thing I invented. And did in high school, and then after high school, somebody wanted to play that game, and none of them had ever played any role playing. And I was like, cool, I got it worked out.
Yeah. And I
Although I
but I
did get to
don't want
steal
to
from other places too.
I think that's smart. Like I'm not saying like you're cheating or
No.
whatever. Like that's the benefit of honing your craft.
It's just a hobby that I really have always loved and has been so very fundamental to my life and my identity. And it's not working anymore. As both a GM and a player, it's not doing it for me the same. And I don't know why. And maybe it's an old thing. But I can't really figure out how that would translate. I don't know. But that's largely why I don't think I'm very good anymore, is I don't have a lot of GMing experiences where I walk away saying, that was really cool. I will have other people talk about it but it's usually like a year later. Be like, remember that campaign? Because that's, you always get rose-colored glasses when you're talking about a campaign from like a year ago or something, because you can describe it in short detail and get right to the funny bits and be like, yeah, but it took us weeks to get there and interminable conversations that didn't even make any sense. But yeah, very seldom do I walk away from a gaming session being like, that was good. I did good thing. I felt good about that. That was a fun time.
Do you feel like, okay, I feel like my experience with gaming is either we play one shots or we play a campaign, but a lot of times we never finish the campaign because somebody gets tired or sick or can't be there anymore, and the rest of us, rather than go on, are like, nah, let's just, roll new characters. Because we're all kind of sick of it by then. Is that a universal experience?
I mean, I'm not the universe. I can't say for sure, but as
Oh,
a, be
but you're my
careful, as
universe.
a, she's standing on your little bead thing and she's trying to get off, but she keeps doing it in ways that I'm worried is going to knock it over. But no, oh, there it went. It stayed on your couch at least. That has always been my experience. And not even to that degree. You one shots are for cons, or on rare occasion they were somebody's gone this week, I'm gonna throw together a one shot that's unrelated. And then
Or we
I'm
have
not.
somebody that wants to try gaming, but they don't want to commit to the.
I'm not sure I've ever finished a campaign as a player or a GM.
Okay.
I feel like in college there was one that we finished, but we decided we liked it, so we came back, and some people were playing the same characters and some were playing new characters. It was sort of a season two kind of thing.
Gotcha.
And that we didn't finish, I don't think. So in college, there was a little bit more emphasis on trying to make them have a set arc, because frequently it was all our schedules work for this time, this semester. Next
Right.
semester, we have no idea. And that is a thing. There are versions of campaigns that are just short, and I wish I would do and slash play in more of these, where they're only meant to be like three or four adventures in an arc, and that's the whole campaign. A lot of the actual plays, you will see more of that. All the Dimension 20 stuff, it gets longer, but they had a lot of like shorter ones that were like six episodes, and just had a completed story then. But no, I think that is pretty universal. There are other gamers who listen. Tell us your thoughts. How is your experience with actually completing campaigns? Because yeah, mine is not good. Well, especially back in like high school when we really got into it, we would really enjoy making characters. And then we
Right.
would play a couple of sessions, and then we kind of weren't too into it. And then somebody would have bought a new game and they'd tell us about it. And we're like, that's awesome. Let's try that one.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, we
Which,
never really had much chance.
yeah, but if that's what all of you want to do,
Well, and
it's
it
kind of
was
like
the
a
90s. It was one of the big booms of tabletop role playing. So there were new games constantly.
Just so
Yeah, I
you know,
never felt that was what I wanted to do, but it's what I did.
your video has been frozen up for me for quite a while now. But I can
It
still hear
must,
you. The audio is
you can still hear
fine.
me. All right, that's interesting.
Don't know what that means.
Well, we're at about time anyway, so we'll leave that for the chickens to figure out. Thank you, my dear, for filling in here.
Thank
We
you, my
may
dear,
see
for
her.
having me.
We may see her again in some
Oh.
future bits, but what?
Now I see you and Ezzy.
I have no idea what this video looked like, all things considered, but please go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us your thoughts on any of this. Have you seen Theater Camp? Have you watched Fallout? Don't spoil anything past two episodes, because that's as far as we've watched. We may have watched more by the time this airs, but we may not have, so don't assume. Also, don't spoil it for other people. Also, yeah, your thoughts on GMing in general, assuming you have or have experienced someone else GMing. Also, please email themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. In my opinion, is where we get our most interesting topics of conversation. Otherwise, it's just us talking about what we watched on the movies, and after 20 minutes, William remembering he's also seen it. And that's not so funny.
And especially with the two of us, we hang out all the time. So
We do. We have nothing
we
to talk
have
about.
only half as much stuff to talk about.
Most of the time, we are just staring coldly and silently at each other. We don't even have the TV on.
That's what we should do next week.
Just stare.
Just an hour of silence.
I could be into that. But until then, that's Thunderdome.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.